on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, December 10th, 2024 edition, and the calendar is moving along fast, just about 2.5 weeks left until Thanksgiving was about 2.5 weeks ago. And, markets are preparing for the year ahead. 2025 is likely to be a very different year than we are experiencing right now in 2024. New administration, new trends likely to emerge, and we're already starting to see some of those. And we are our job today is to unpack those trends for you, answer your finance and investment questions, and give you some perspective so that you can make better decisions with your money, not just one time, but day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year. So don't hesitate, pick up the phone, give us a call. 888-99-CHART is the number. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
My question is about using stop orders to lock in profits and just protect my portfolio in general from market sell-offs. Are there any rules of thumb when using stop orders when selling? Any drawbacks to the strategy? Thanks. Love the show.
Well, the drawback is that you could be selling right near near support now. So you want to typically put that stop order when it breaks support considerably. And you know that the uptrend is clearly over once that that number gets hit. So oftentimes it makes more sense to have a trailing stop, move that stop up on a regular basis, so that you're capturing more of that gain as the stock does go up. I like the idea of having a stop. You should always have some sort of a stop there. And then you have to look at a stop order versus stop limit order or stop market order. Okay. So a typical stop order is going to send a market order that could be on a gap down where it goes well below that stop order, and you might get filled at a much lower price. So remember that as well. Stop limit orders just create that limit sell order at the limit price or the stop price, excuse me. And so there are some idiosyncrasies there that you have to understand and make sure that you're setting it the right way for your ultimate goal. So I like that you are thinking about this, but they are things you have to constantly shift as the uptrend continues. Okay, thanks for the call. There will be a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we will hit on all of these. The first one is our main focus point, and that is, should central banks target financial conditions, okay, instead of just some sort of Fed funds rate? For example, okay, U.S. financial markets are experiencing a lot of overvaluation right now. And as market valuations become a target for investment behavior, it loses reliability as an economic health indicator. So we will look at the proposals from some economists on how central banks should start thinking about their policy in this new world we are in. And so we'll get to that. Also, we have some other topics on the docket. One is in regards to timing the market. And there's some new research that came out between 2020 and 2024. And it looked at different asset classes and how well certain investors timed the market. Hint, hint, they didn't do very well, but we'll look at that. And then also, how much oil can Trump get the industry to pump? We know Trump wants to drill, baby, drill, but how realistic is that? Okay, what does that even mean? You know, is it a small increase, a major increase. Will corporations follow his requests? Can they follow his requests? Is it economical to follow his requests? So we'll look at that story. And then lastly, China is loosening their monetary policy and what that could mean for their economy as well as the commodity markets. So we'll look at that as well. So that's what's on the docket for us today. And I'm ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART. We'll be also getting to your voice bank questions. One is in regards to inherited IRAs and the other is on S&P Global. And we'll also tackle some questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. But we're going to a break. And on the other side, I will touch briefly on today's market activity, then play some more of your questions here on InvestDoc. My phone lines are open, waiting for your finance and investment questions now at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
The numbers are in. InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your finance and investment questions 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a quick look at the market today. It was a decidedly negative day overall. Okay, and you had some major stocks up, but most, especially mid-cap and small-cap space, that was really where the weakness was. The S&P was down about 0.3%, and Dow also down 0.35%, the NASDAQ down about 0.25%. So, you know, modest down day overall, but like I said, mid-caps actually the worst, down over 1% on average. Small-caps down a little bit less than 1% on average. NVIDIA down 2.7%, Apple up a little. Google had a nice day as there was some news of them having a quantum computing breakthrough. So that was really the big winner on the day. Meta up about 1%, Amazon down slightly, Microsoft down slightly. And you had finances down the most. Those are the ones that were hurt the most, at least throughout the day. And, you know, we are still in this kind of period where the market was overbought, and we're coming back in the last couple of days. No real big deal. We're still above the 20-day moving average, and on the S&P, this is on the S&P. And small caps, however, they're back down to the 20-day moving average. So once again, we're in a choppy period. Not much really to glean here overall. You had gold prices up. You had the dollar down. This is something we'll get to here in a little bit, which is a China central bank that is easing, that is good for commodity prices. Okay, so we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's why you saw gold up and kind of a mixed market, but mostly down. Okay. Now let's keep things moving and swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, it's 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalks. I'm calling today to hear your opinion on S&P Global, ticker symbol SPGI, and its current valuation. I'm considering starting a small position and dollar cost averaging on dips. Next year's projected PE ratio is in the low 30s, but what caught my attention was the free cash flow yield, which is higher than the average over the past 10 years. It's only one metric, but given the SPGI's strong free cash flow growth over the past 5 years, it looks attractive. Second question, if you have time, where can I find a comprehensive guide on liquidity dynamics for a complete understanding? Thank you, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by what are the liquidity dynamics. Are you talking about the average daily volume? That's typically how liquid a name is. And the average daily volume is over a million shares on a $512 stock. That is a lot of liquidity. So it's certainly liquid. Maybe you're talking about the balance sheet potentially. And frankly, the balance sheet is pretty strong. You have only about $11 billion in long-term debt and a market cap of $158 billion and an enterprise value of $173 billion. So really no issue there. Its free cash flow is about $5 billion. But if you're based on a market cap of almost $160, that's not that high. You're talking about less than 3% free cash flow yield. Not amazing. And it is trading at a pretty high multiple. Price to sales 11 times. And then enterprise value to EBITDA 27 times, even forward looking, it's around 25 times. So this is not a cheap name. This is really a play. And for everyone else out there, what S&P Global does is they are a benchmark and ratings agency for global capital, commodity markets, and commercial markets. So they rate bonds, for example. Obviously, they have the rights to S&P 500, and they get licensing. They get licensing revenue from, you know, iShares, who runs, you know, the S&P 500 ETF, SPY, also VOO from Vanguard, etc. They're paying S&P for the ability to market themselves as an S&P fund. Okay, and so, you know, fairly well diversified. Obviously, the amount of money just continued to flow into passive index funds certainly distorts the markets, but it earns S&P Global more money, and that's why the earnings continue to go up year after year. Now, a big part of that revenue is the rating of the bonds. Now, we are getting a bunch of refinancing activity late next year, and so that's probably it's into 2026, and that's probably why you're also getting earnings expected to be up 21% this year, 11% next year. So there's some nice positive momentum on that side. But if you look at the estimates for the next year going forward, revenues next quarter only up 9% when they're up 16% this last quarter. Earnings expect to be up 7% when they're up 21% last quarter. So you're seeing the expectations that the growth will slow as we move through 2025. So that's probably the biggest worry that I see is that are you going to get some sort of decline in the multiple as growth slows? And that would be my biggest worry. You are getting some weakness on the chart, or at least weakness in momentum, you know, no long-term weakness, just kind of some near-term slowdown in momentum. And I could see this, you know, pulling back into the low 400s. Right now it's the low 500s. So would not surprise me to see that because of those high multiples and that slowdown in growth. So I'd be patient on it. I wouldn't be too excited to jump into it right now from a valuation perspective and the trends in earnings. So I'm a hold off. Certainly a good company, good profitability, solid balance sheet. I have no issue with that, but I'd wait a little longer until I get a better price in that low 400 range. Thanks for the call. Now, you probably noticed that we are answering questions submitted by viewers over on our YouTube channel, and this one came in earlier. A couple days ago, it says Ulam Spiral says, what are your opinions on Prologis? PLD is the symbol, and this is a REIT, and it's one of the largest industrial REITs that's out there. Okay, you're talking about a market cap of $105 billion, and they acquire, develop, and operate industrial properties in the United States, the Americas, Europe, and Asia. So worldwide, 3.4% dividend yield. Funds from operations, or FFO, is how you look at effectively earnings for a REIT. And it is continuing to go up, $5.35 last year, $5.44 expected this year, and then $5.82 expected next year. So we like that positive trend. However, if you're talking about the multiples that it's trading at, it is a bit higher than you're going to see elsewhere. And that's why you're getting some weakness in the chart here. It was down the day, down over 2% on the day. And it's generally been in a downtrend. And so I that's what worries me, is it's really bearishly consolidating from the move down in 2022 and just been chopping between about $100 per share and 135 ever since. Now it's at 113. So I don't like the technical momentum. I do think that it is overvalued at this point. Certainly should be on the watch list, but I think the multiples need to come down. I think this is likely to head closer to the $70 to $80 range. That's where I would pick up PLD Prologis. Thanks for the call. They're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, and more answers to your questions. And of course, you can call me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now let's talk a little bit about our main focus point, and that is about how central banks should think about shifting their targets. We know that they are trying to tame inflation as well as maximize employment. And those are the mandates, but they have tools in order to achieve those end goals. Now, their typical tool is to raise or lower interest rates. But since the financial crisis, they've been doing more and more other things in order to improve or deteriorate financial conditions, right? If they're trying to tame inflation and they think things are getting out of control, well, they'll bring financial conditions in. And there are multiple ways to do that. And in essence, what they're talking about is liquidity. Okay, how abundant is liquidity or not? If it's too abundant, inflation tends to run rampant. You saw that in 2021, 2022, when the central banks were keeping interest rates at zero, as well as governments were they were spending money, right? And deficits were massive, and therefore financial conditions became very, very loose. And then starting in 2022, throughout the year, they were tightening conditions by raising rates and starting to do what is called QT, right? Quantitative tightening. And they've been continuing to do quantitative tightening until this day. And now they're trying to lower interest rates and have a more balanced look at the liquidity conditions in the market. Okay. And there's a new argument from three economists, Ricardo Caballero, Tomas Caravello, and Alp Simsek. And they are arguing that instead of using these interest rates, they should target the financial conditions index and say, this is where we want financial conditions to be. And this simplifies the end goal, right? Where, when they're trying to lower interest, they're trying to do all these things nowadays in order to get an end result. When in fact they should just target that end result, right? Right now they're saying we're going to raise interest rates, we're going to lower interest rates. That is part of the process to get to their end result. And this paper basically says that there's too much drama in their current process. And that feeds into the real economy, because there is a lot of volatility to figure out where they're actually going when it comes to financial conditions. Meaning they might say they're easing policy, they might lower interest rates, but is that actually having the desired effect when there's a lot of complexities here, right? How much is the government spending? Are they expanding or shrinking their balance sheet? right? Right now, they're shrinking their balance sheet. Are banks lending or not? Okay. You know, all of these are factors that play into financial conditions. Because lending happens not just through banks, but also markets as well, right? How many bonds are being issued? That's lending, for example. And so when you pull back and you say, okay, what is that end goal? End goal is to have looser or tighter financial conditions. So why not just do that? Why not just target that? You can look at the Chicago Fed National Financial Conditions Index or the St. Louis Fed Financial Stress Index, or Federal Reserve has its own new financial conditions index. Okay. So all these can be targeted. And it would help mute the knock-on impact in the real economy. Because ultimately, when you are talking about a potential crisis in either direction, it's a mismatch between liquidity and the demand on liquidity. For example, at the end of next year, we are getting a refinancing wave, okay? And the refinancing wave is going to require liquidity. And as that liquidity is used up to refinance this bonds, there's going to be less liquidity moving around, and that means equities likely will have a tougher time. The real economy will likely have a tougher time. And that brings more risk of a mismatch of the refinancing wave and the liquidity that is needed. And if suddenly there isn't enough liquidity, you could have a major drop in equities, financial conditions. Okay. And so instead of trying to guess exactly where interest rates should be in order to get the required financial conditions outcome, why not just target the right financial conditions that you want and then work backwards from there? And I think this is a very, very good approach, a much better approach than what they're using now, and could be the way forward for a lot of central banks. The next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story behind this headline. Gold prices surge amid geopolitical tensions in Syria. Concerns over the regime change in Syria and its implications for regional stability have prompted a flight to traditional safe haven assets like gold. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Let's face it, InvestTalk listeners. Life can be unpredictable, but securing your family's financial future doesn't have to be. That's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. Fabric offers modern, flexible term life insurance designed to fit your lifestyle. Whether you're planning for the future or just want a little extra peace of mind, Fabric makes protecting what matters most simple and stress-free. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right from your couch, all online and on your schedule. You could be covered in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Even if you have life insurance through your employer, it may not offer enough protection for your family, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget, like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Fabric has partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families like yours for over 50 years. There's no risk, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/investtalk. That's meetfabric.com/investtalk. meetfabric.com/investtalk. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money,
while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin or Luke, Joe from South Carolina here. I have a question. I received an inherited IRA. It's about $30,000. My plan is to take $7,000 out a year and use that to either send an IRA or a Roth IRA, depending on the year and how I want to pay those taxes. But my question is, with it being December, I'm going to be taking the $7,000 out for 2025 in January, but then the remaining $23,000, it's all just sitting in cash right now in that inherited account. So I've kind of missed out on the market a little bit. With my plan being to take $7,000 out a year, what your suggestion would be? Would it be money market or actually going into stocks, since I wouldn't be taking money out again until 2026? I wanted to see your advice on that and if going into the market made sense, or if, because it's possibly a year to year and a half away, the market could be down 50%. You never know. Thanks so much. I'll listen to your answer on the podcast.
Well, I wouldn't look at it like you're taking the money out, because you're not using the money. You don't need the money. This money is going back into an IRA, back into savings. And so you might be moving it around types of accounts, but ultimately your time horizon is about, when do you need the money for use? Okay. So that's the way I would look at it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, money in a, doing a Roth conversion, for example. Just because you're doing that conversion, technically that's a distribution from your IRA into the Roth. And, but that doesn't mean that you're using that money. You're just doing a conversion, locking in that tax rate. Whereas an inherited IRA, yeah, you have to, you're forced to take some of that money out. And so I would just be looking for a long-term time horizon, whatever that time horizon is for this money on the investment side, and invest it that way. So don't think of it like you're taking the money. You're just moving the money effectively from one type of account to another. So I would be fine investing it long-term, as long as your time horizon is long-term. Thanks for the call. Now, when people take the time to leave an Invest Talk podcast review on iTunes, I'd like to thank them for the courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. Joel63892 says, what's your opinion on Ryan Specialty Holdings? I have a few insurance stocks in my portfolio that have done well. Let's take a look here. R-Y-A-N is the symbol. And it is a mid-cap, $17 billion market cap, provides specialty products and solutions for the insurance, for insurance brokers, agents, and carriers. Earnings continue to go up year after year after year. Good solid, about 20% earnings growth for the past couple of years. Revenue growth is in the high 20% range. And it is in a longer-term nice uptrend. The issue is that it's just had a... It just hit the 100-day moving average for the second time in about a month and a half. And that worries me a bit. I don't like that move. Usually when it hits on a certain support level multiple times, it means it's ready to break that. Now, it's done it twice. Doesn't mean it has to break it, but there's a much better chance now than it was back in October when it hit that level, I'm guessing likely on earnings, and bounced off, and now we're returning to those levels. So it's trading at a fairly high multiple, $67 per share right now. So it's around $1.80 this year, $2.22 next year. So roughly a 30 plus times multiple. And that's what would frankly worry me the most is those technicals are weakening and it is trading at a high multiple. So I like the name. I like that you have it on your in your portfolio. It's profitable return equity, 10%. That's good. That's not amazing. Earnings or profitability has come down since 2021. Right now, 10% return equity, that's okay. Decent balance sheet, about $2.6 billion in net debt on a $11.5 billion enterprise value. So I would not be adding to this. I worry a bit, like I said, about this recent momentum. It does look like it's waning. The multiples are fairly high, even though it's growing. Earnings expectations for next year continue to be robust, but I'm not liking this technical picture in the near term. So I'm holding off on adding to Ryan, R-Y-A-N. Now let's go take a live call. Richard from Santa Clarita. How you doing, Richard?
Good. How you doing?
Great, great. What can I help you with?
Got a question on the Vanguard International Stock ETF. That's VSGX. My question is, I think, you know, that some international exposure is good. I've heard, you know, from the show also positives on the Mexico ETF, and the India, the Franklin India one. Mm-hmm. Looking for overall, though, some additional international exposure to Europe, for example. In fact, mm-hmm. just, you know, a broad ETF. Wondering if this is a good one. And the other thing that I'm thinking about, though, also, if we have big tariffs, does that still make this something like this a good idea? So anyway, that's my question for today.
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is the Vanguard ESG International Stock ETF. So understand that there is that ESG bent to it, and there's a lot of money kind of flowing out of that particular style of investing. It's starting to be out of favor, and many investors are realizing that it was more of a nice thing to think about, but not necessarily, didn't really have real world applications to the ESG craze. And so that's one thing I would say I would avoid this for. Now, when it comes to your, you know, you're talking about India, you're talking about Mexico, I have no problem with that. I think that is a good place. Those are good places to invest. Okay. Now, I'm trying to see where this, there we go, region. So this is 28% in Europe and 16% Japan. I think that's a good place to invest in as well. If you're looking at, let's go by country, Japan is 16%, China is only 7%, Taiwan. I don't really see, India is about 6%. I don't see Mexico. Where is Mexico on here? It's pretty low on the list. Yeah, less than 1% is in Mexico. So this wouldn't be a great ETF to get exposure there. I would focus more on those particular country ETFs than this one. It's okay, but it doesn't really get me excited. I think you have better options that are out there.
If you already have, you know, like Franklin Mexico, Franklin India mm-hmm. ETFs, mm-hmm. to bring this in also to have some exposure to the VSGX, you know, just so you're getting, you know, even broader international exposure. What do you think of this, you know, to supplement that?
Well, to supplement, I think that's fine. But once again, I don't think you need the ESG aspect. You could buy VXUS, which is the Vanguard Total International Stock ETF, and that's going to filter out that ESG bent. And I think that's a much better way to go. You still have a lot of Japan, the UK is in here, China is in here as well. India is a little higher, about 6.5% there. So that's a much better way, I think, to gain exposure to foreign markets. But to going back to your original question, are the tariffs, could that be an issue? I absolutely think it can. It depends on how aggressive Trump is. And, you know, certain countries are going to be hurt more than others. And so it's going to be a mixed bag. And I would be worried about that. And if you look at the chart of a VX US as well as that VX GX, it's looking like it topped back in October and it's now in a downtrend. So it wouldn't be a time where I'd be aggressively adding foreign exposure. I like you to thinking about it, but I want a better technical setup than we have now.
Yeah. What is ESG, by the way? I'm not even sure what that means.
So that's environmental, social, and governance. So ESG is basically saying, okay, these companies check all the boxes of good environments, environmental history, right? Not having major oil spills and, you know, dumping chemicals into the environment and into the air, et cetera. Social would be, diversity within the organization, not having, huge scandals when it comes to discrimination, things like that. And then governance would be, okay, this company has good governance practices, meaning their board chairman is different than their CEO, for example. So there's good checks and balances within the organization. They tend to act well towards their shareholders, meaning they're not paying their employees or their executives huge salaries, et cetera. So that's what ESG kind of stands for.
And if you say the tariff is something that could be considered in this particular ETF, are you also saying that tariffs are a real concern for Mexico and India ETFs? Or
I think they're a concern. I don't think I would be more concerned about India when it comes to tariffs than I would Mexico. I think Mexico is a strong partner, and I don't see that being a big problem. I think it's a very important part of our economy, and I don't think there'll be major tariffs on Mexico.
All right, great. Thanks a lot for all the info.
No problem. Let's go talk to Will in San Diego. He wants to talk about trailing stops.
Yes, I'm having a little difficulty understanding just how they work. For example, if I've got a stock and I put in a trailing stop at 10%, mm-hmm. and it goes down 3% each year for about each day for about 5 consecutive days, when does the sale trigger?
So a trailing stop is typically, okay, what is that high price if it's in an uptrend? And if you say 10%, it's 10% from that highest price. So if that 10% pullback, that's when that stop would be triggered.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't go like 3% each day for 5 days and then it doesn't trigger?
Well, 3% for 5 days is, over 15%. So
if it's 10%, then at some point, 10.
Yeah, it's gonna hit that 10% at some point over those 5 days.
Oh, okay. Okay, yep. I got you. Thanks
Sometime
a lot.
On day four. There you go. All right. Thanks for the call, Will. Now let's pivot over and talk a bit about, where are we? There we go. Let's talk about timing the market. And there's something called the return gap. And this is an important number to understand. And it's basically the gap between the difference between the stated annual returns of a particular fund and the actual dollar weighted returns in the fund. And this is important because typically when the fund goes down, right, there's a poor performance, people pile out of it, and less money is in the fund. And then when it turns around and goes back up, there's less money to appreciate. Okay. And then it starts building and going up and up and up, and people pile in because they're chasing returns. And then the fund turns down again. And so this number captures the difference between the average return for a fund and what the average investor actually experiences in returns within that fund. Okay. And there was a new research report, and it looked at the period between 2015 and 2019, and then compared it from from 2020 to October 31st, 2024. So just recently. And what it showed was that poor market timing costs investors over 0.5% a year in value to their portfolios. And it was even more pronounced when you look at different subsectors, like small caps, for example. That gap was about 0.83%. Sorry, on large caps, it was 0.3%. And on small caps, it was up to 1.38%. Think about that, from 0.83% to 1.3%. So that what that meant was small cap funds, if you were investing in small cap funds, the average investor experienced a 1.38% difference in returns from the stated return of the fund if you held the fund for the entire year. Okay. And the previous period from 2015 to 2019, it was 0.62%. So during COVID and during this period where there was a lot of, you know, emotions and a lot of volatility, investors did the wrong thing even more because of that volatility. And it's the most pronounced in large caps, small caps, as well as value and growth leaning funds. It shows you that that's what people tend to chase, right? Are you investing in large caps? Okay, large caps are doing well, I'm moving into large caps, and vice versa. Small caps are doing well, I'm moving my money into small caps. Are we going to lean on value or growth? Well, they chase those returns. And I love talking about this because it just shows you that the average person chases. So they do. You look at short-term returns and you move in that direction. That's the human nature. When in reality is, you kind of want to fade that. Or more importantly, you actually want to look at the economic backdrop and know which sectors, which parts of the market tend to outperform based on that. If you're able to have a big macro view of the broader economy, an accurate one, you can do much, much better than the average person who just tries the market time. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekend, is help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Kamur in the Bay Area, looking at SCHD.
It's SCHD, SPOB.
U.S. Dividend Equity ETF, yep.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
Yeah, I want to know if it's a good buy or not to buy.
Well, this is just simply a large cap value ETF. That's it. It's a popular fund because people want to buy dividends. I always say dividends are very overrated when you're looking at the total return profile in the equity markets because companies that pay lower dividends but have high profitability and are able to reinvest that cash flow in their business and grow their profits over time, it's going to be a much better business to invest in than one that pays, you know, 4%, 5%, 6% dividend, but has very little growth. So don't just buy this because it's paying a dividend. You want to buy this because it's large cap value. If you want to own large cap value, then this is a well-diversified portfolio, 20% financial services, 12% energy, 11% industrials, only 1.5% basic materials. I like that to be higher. There's no real estate exposure here. I would like that to be a little bit higher. No utilities, which is interesting. So you probably want some exposure there, but it's still fairly well diversified. It's in 14% healthcare. It's probably my least favorite sector currently. Only 10% technology. I think that's fine. Consumer defensive, about 13%. So I'd rather that to be a little bit lower because it's a bond proxy and there's some duration risk there. So there's some issues with this particular ETF, but overall it's solid. You know, 4 out of 5 stars on Morningstar. It's a good fund, but once again, don't buy it because it says dividend in the name. It pays a 3.5% dividend. That's not why you buy it. You buy it because you want a large cap value ETF. That's what you want. Then this is a solid one for that.
Okay. Thank you. And no, what problem. is the maintenance fees for this one?
Yeah, so this is expense ratio is 6 basis points. So it is pretty cheap. So that's kind of another positive here, is that it is a very low cost ETF.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about Drill Baby Drill. Now, Scott Bessent, the nominee for Treasury Secretary, has his 3-3-3 goal, which is cut America's federal deficit to 3% of GDP, as well as create 3% economic growth and increase oil production by 3 million barrels a day from 30 million this year. So about 10% increase in oil production. And what he wants to do is open up more federal land, offshore blocks for drilling, approve permits for LNG projects, etc. And the goal is really energy dominance. And more exports would reduce the trade deficit, increase tax takes, and it would help them create a more geopolitical aims, like tightening power in Iran, for example, power artificial intelligence, etc. But the big question is, can they actually get these companies to drill? Because remember, while we are effectively a petrostate now, we are the largest producer of oil in the world. Most people don't understand that. We are 13.5 million barrels came out of the ground here in the United States in October. That's up from 11.5 million barrels when the Ukraine war started. But mainly this is coming from shale. But this is a different environment since the early 2010s, when there were a lot of shale companies, small, that were just pumping. They were the ones drill baby drilling. And it pushed a lot of them into bankruptcy and being forced to being acquired by large companies. And these large multinational oil companies that own a lot of the shale region now, they're risk averse and they want stable dividends, double digit returns. And a lot of the wells they've already used have been good wells have been depleted. The best ones have been depleted. And so they have a little incentive to drill unless oil gets well above $80 per barrel. Now we're less than $70 per barrel now. So I think it's going to be a lot harder for President-elect Trump to get these companies to drill, because it's just not quite economical unless you actually get oil prices up. He wants the opposite. He wants oil prices down. So that's probably going to be the hardest thing for the new administration to accomplish, besides cutting the deficit all the way to 3% without triggering a recession. That would probably be the hardest one. But it'll be very interesting to see if they can continue to grow production beyond what they've already done over the past couple of years. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate on iTunes as well. Remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number by heading over to investtalk.com and clicking on the portfolio review button and scheduling a time with me. This is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.